In business, you rarely hear the expression for life. You make a purchase for a product, for a service, and there's a time frame there. Well, that's not the case with Awaken 180 weight loss. Allow me to explain. You know, a year ago, I started with Awaken 180 weight loss and had incredible success losing weight. But you can lose all the weight in the world and not keep it off. And what good is it? That's why I have support for life from Awaken 180. Yeah. I mean, I go back for check-ins and make sure everything's going smoothly, but if I ever had a problem, the counselors are there to get me back on track. Why don't you do what I did and call for a consultation? 844-346-1800. 844-346-1800 or go to awaken180weightloss.com.
What does 25 cents back on every purchase mean to you? A free lunch? That gadget you've been eyeing? A night out with the fellas? With your Primis Perks checking account, you get 25 cents back with every purchase using your debit card and zero ATM, overdraft, or annual fees. With this completely free account, you can watch the money roll in with every swipe and find the freedom to go further with your cash. Primis, the bank that gets it right. Primis is a member FDIC. ATM transactions do not count towards debit card rewards.
The views or opinions expressed during this podcast from our guests do not necessarily reflect the views of our hosts or the school.
Hello and welcome back to episode 5 of the Listen Up Levcast. I'm your host Salvatore and I'm joined with Leventhorpe Head student Stephanie, who will be co-hosting with me today. Now, today's episode is a great one as we are joined by former Leventhorpe English teacher, blogger and LGBTQ plus inclusion lead, Mr. Allen. So thank you for joining us today.
Lovely to be here.
This month is LGBT plus history month in the UK. Can you tell the listeners why you think it's important for us to celebrate it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think and sort of acknowledge various different voices. So whether they be LGBT voices, whether they be BAME voices and things like that. And, considering that, the voices, these narratives that are coming through, I think, have only really been coming through in the last sort of 40, 50 years or so, when they've been sort of quite prevalent in society. I think actually, it is really important for us to sort of acknowledge all those different sort of aspects of history that perhaps we haven't been subjected to as much. I think really it's a case of, no matter your gender, ethnic background, whatever, I think it's really important for us to just have an insight into everyone's experiences. I think LGBTQ plus History Month is a really good opportunity to celebrate those experiences, but also learn from them as well, because I think absolutely, we learn a lot from those things. Absolutely.
Yeah. And you created an excellent blog called Pondering English Pedagogy. Could you tell us a bit about it and why you started it?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, pedagogy is that sort of, it's the word used when we describe the aspects that we use to help teach and the methods that we use for teaching. So when I actually put the blog together, it was really to reflect on my own practices as an English teacher. And it was really meant to be about looking at English teaching and what I was doing in the classroom and sharing those sort of nationally with other teachers. It's quite common, really. A lot of teachers keep their own blogs and things like that. But actually, I attended a National Educational Union sort of group, which was focused for LGBT. And I learned a huge amount from listening to people's experiences. And we talked a lot about diversity and inclusion in the schools that they worked in. And that just really inspired me to write a particular piece on diversity for, including LGBT voices in education. And actually, yeah, so that ended up being my first blog post. So I've done a couple of others now on other teaching areas, but actually I gained a lot of confidence in being able to deliver such things to my own school by blogging about other people's experiences. So it's quite helpful.
Nice, brilliant.
So in your blog, you mentioned the term usualizing. For listeners who don't know what that is and what it means, could you explain that to them?
Yeah, so usualizing is quite a new used by Sue Sanders, who was the founder of LGBT History Month UK, actually. And it's it's sort of similar to this term of normalizing. I think we're quite similar with this idea of normalizing things and what things are actually normal. But usualizing is a term that's slightly less threatening, because I think once we say something is normal, it implies that the things that are opposite to that normal are therefore abnormal. You know, they're not sort of welcome in society out. I suppose making those voices and experiences every day. So an example of that would be, if I'm talking about the theme of family in A Christmas Carol, for example, I might put up pictures of what families look like to sort of help students think about, you know, what do we mean by family? And rather than just putting up an image of a man, a woman and two children, which is what we might term as that typical nuclear family, I might have pictures of black families, I might have same-sex couples, I might have pictures of families without children. And what I'm doing in that process is usualizing. I'm not drawing attention or speaking about the fact that I've got a same-sex family being displayed on the wall, but students can see immediately that these are all the different ideas of what family means. So it's usualized that sort of concept. It's quite different to what we call actualizing, which is when we say to someone, we're going to read this gay narrative, and we're going to talk about the experiences of what it was like for a gay man having attention to that particular voice. So it's a subtle difference, but yeah, usualizing is essentially a non-threatening term of normalizing.
Thank you. And how have your experiences been with schools with supporting LGBT plus issues?
Yeah, so it's an interesting one, because I mean, obviously I started teaching about sort of six and a half years ago now, really, and obviously trained at Leventhorpe. But I think I only really started to actively involve myself in LGBT sort of inclusion very recently. So I was recently made, as you pointed out, the sort of inclusion lead for LGBT students and staff. And I think really those experiences have come from, as I said, talking to sort of unions and other sort of schools nationwide. So it really came about of a student coming to speak to me about their own sexuality. And it suddenly made me aware that actually we need more awareness of these things in the particular school that I work at. But also, you know, I think it's the same with a lot of schools, is diversity has become far more prevalent and far more of a focus. So I suppose it's been a great experience. And I think, you know, as I said, we looked at curriculum review, but we've been celebrating our first History Month this February, and that's been going really well. So I think it's just a case of building on that with training and building on that with looking at things like student panels and staff panels and stuff like that, really.
Yeah.
They're becoming increasingly a big thing. As you can see, you have yours in your name tag for Zoom. How do you think we can encourage the asking and usualizing of pronouns more frequently in schools and also in the wider community?
Yeah, I'm glad you've asked that question, because I think it's a really important aspect of inclusion. I mean, at the end of the day, we're in a really sort of fast-moving society. You know, when we look at the way in which people identify in terms of their gender identity and their sexual orientation and things like that, that's changed a huge amount when I was born. And I think, you know, a lot of younger people especially are now starting to identify as non-binary, are starting to identify as trans men or trans women. And that's essentially, it's their identity, you know, it's how they perceive themselves to be. So I think the first point is it's okay to find that it's confusing at times. You know, even I'm confused by it at times, I think everybody is. And it's about embracing that element of confusion and learning from it and not being safe with some of the pronouns. I think it's a case of apologizing and then trying to rectify that mistake by saying, okay, sorry, you know, I didn't realize that you identified as they or their. And so I think it's a case of acknowledging that and then putting that back into place. I think one really good area of practice is, you know, as you pointed out in my Zoom sort of tag, I've got he, him as my pronouns. And I think that's a really easy way of which students and staff can display and outwardly display their pronouns. And it allows the diverse or genderqueer pupils to sort of look at that and think, oh, okay, you know, I know that I can be open about my own gender identity in this school. I think another key area for both teachers and for students is to try and to avoid falling into the trap of using gender binaries in the classroom. So grouping students by boys and girls, for example, is automatically going to ostracize, I suppose, students who are more genderqueer or gender fluid. So rather than grouping by boys or girls, which might have different author names on them or different colors like green or blue or pink or whatever. So I'll say, you know, you guys are going to be in the pink group, you guys are going to be in the green group. And I think it's really that sense of, if we're conscious in our use of pronouns and awareness of pronouns, mm-hmm. that's really how we get better at using them throughout school, really.
Thanks. I think that's really useful. Definitely a really important point. So as well as teaching English, you're working towards increased LGBTQ plus provision role as the LGBTQ plus inclusion lead. What are your plans for this?
So I think in terms of provision, I mean, as I stated earlier, I think one of the key things is obviously awareness and acknowledgement of LGBT voices. I think, you know, one of the key things we're doing at the moment is we do what we call history cafes, where they're sort of short lectures run by history teachers and history students. And we're doing like a history cafe special on the poet Sappho. You know, she was, and that's where the term lesbian comes from, really. And you know, that's something that I only recently discovered. So I think it's great that we've got a classics teacher who's doing something like that. I mean, I think one of the key things as well is safe spaces. So I have a student panel of about 7 or 8 students. You know, some identify as LGBTQ, some identify as being an ally. And I think it's really about providing that element of safety and support for such students. So one of the key things I've really been trying to do is external help groups and things like that. So they're really great in terms of, because I think many students may feel that they can't speak to people that they know about things like gender diversity and sexual orientation. So I think having that option to speak to external groups and things like that to get support is really important. But I think, you know, these also marry up with areas of BAME inclusion as well, you know, and cultural diversity and ethnic diversity and things like that. Just want to utilise all of these things into the school atmosphere, really, into the community. You know, I don't want it necessarily to be something that we think, oh, you know, that person's gay or that person's non-binary. It should just be something that we accept as a sort of day-to-day aspect of our society. But I think the final thing I really want to do with this is think about providing students with those sort of cues where they can look at staff members and think, okay, I can definitely speak to that person about these things. So things like rainbow language, if that's one that you're wearing, so that's great. And I think, you know, little badges, I mean, I'm probably going to order some little badges for my lanyard, because we can't have rainbow lanyards because it's a safeguarding aspect. We will have to wear the same colour. So I think little badges that just sort of show, look, you know, you can speak to me. I've got a little sticker on my laptop, for example. I mean, things like that, I think, could be really helpful for anyone who identifies as LGBT in schools, really.
Yeah, definitely. That's really nice to hear as well. I think it is really important, you know, to make all schools a really inclusive place for everyone. So following on from that, how have you been continuing your work online?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, everything's been online, and I'm just sort of pressures of handing in work online and waiting for it to be marked, all those sorts of things. I mean, with inclusion, we've really started all of it online. So I think the challenge for us is actually going to be how we're going to continue that offline, to be honest. I think, you know, we've done a really good job of using software tools like Clipchamp, like Loom, where you get your sort of little face floating around to sort of conduct digital assemblies. And students have been really proactive in stepping up and saying, hey, you know, I want to do an assembly on you know, sexual orientation or whatever. So that's been really good. I mean, I've really tried to use, you know, the school intranet sites that we have to you know, so I created an online LGBTQ plus history page where I'm sort of putting articles on there, sort of links to BBC News things and stuff on there, which is really just sort of saying to students, hey, you know, we can't all be here in person to talk about these things, but if you want to learn about more, then go on here and look at this YouTube video and stuff like that. So in some ways, the online aspect has been really helpful because you can just students access to lots of tools and information that they might actually be quite scared to ask about if they're in school. I guess other areas as well is just support network. So again, putting a list of external support links on the website has been really useful, and a lot of students have already told me that they found that really helpful to help them answer any questions. So yeah, so I think we've dealt with the challenge fairly well, but yeah, it's always a bit of an uphill battle, I think, with online learning. So
yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and it sounds all good, the things that you've been doing, brilliant. And so at Levenford, being A-level English, we have poems by Christina Rossetti, like Goblin Market, and at GCSE, poems by Carol Ann Duffy in our specification. How important is it to study and analyse texts and authors like these to further engage in LGBT plus history?
Oh, I mean, so important. I mean, considering that, I mean, one of the key things is that we find at GCSE is you can be quite limited to the voices that you get to hear. You know, many of them come from sort of canonical literature, so often white British writers. And I think it's so important because our world is so much more culturally diverse. And I think it's really important, especially when you're studying A-level English, if many of you are thinking of going on to do degree-level English, the type of text that you're exposed to and you engage with at degree level, for example, is so much more diverse. You know, and I think it's really important to embrace all aspects of 21st century literature, because it's not just your gay and lesbian writers, but it's your writers who may be straight, but do explore issues of sexual. There's a great book called Girl Woman, but there's a whole aspect. It's an anthology of different women, basically. And it's all fictional, but one of them explores a fictional story of a non-binary person. And I think that's really, you know, that's really important, because we don't really see many of those narratives at the moment. So being exposed to those narratives, learning more about different experiences is important. And I think it's not also just learning about and reading those texts, but also understanding that there are writers who, when they were writing, I mean, I think of someone like Patricia Highsmith, you know, she wrote the novel Carol, which you might have heard has sort of been made into a film, and it's great. But it was originally published under the title A Price of Salt, and she wrote it under a pseudonym. And that was because she was worried about the backlash that she was going to get from writing a book that had sort of lesbian themes in it. So I think it's really important not just to read the text, but to acknowledge all the context behind those things as well. You know, why are these people having to write under false names? Mm. Absolutely, very, very vital. I think if you're going to be an English student, I think you need to, you know, it's so important to explore storytelling and narrative, and that's what these things are all about.
Absolutely, yeah.
About.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, completely agree. So yet again, following on, how do you think schools and the government can be more inclusive of the LGBTQ plus community in the school curriculum in general?
Yeah, it's a tricky question, because I mean, I think it's really important to note that there's been so much headway made. I mean, if we think back to the 80s, and I don't know if you're aware of Section 28, but it was sort of not, you know, it was illegal really to promote homosexuality as a normal relationship. Self was about in year seven. So I think it was about 2003 or so that was lifted. So I think, you know, we've come a long way in that aspect in terms of law. But I think really it's just a case of school leaders embracing diversity and just recognising that celebrating diversity is really important. They don't have to be really complex changes in terms of curriculum and supporting LGBT young people. I mean, for example, having things like wall displays, you know, to usualize, you know, not just LGBT, but people from other ethnic backgrounds, and you know, having posters of significant role models, I think is really important. You know, outside of the curriculum, you've got things like uniform policies, just slight adjustments to those allows trans boys and trans girls to decide what uniform fits them. You know, things like toilets, you know, do your schools have access, or do students have access to toilets that aren't gendered, for example? Because if students are having toilets, then they're already feeling like they've got to put themselves in this sort of binary box. So I think, you know, we have to be very aware of how people's identities are changing. But really small reviews of the curriculum is all that's necessary. You don't need to start creating huge schemes of work on gay people. It doesn't have to be like that. I will always welcome things like that, but it's not necessary. I think, you know, including, one of the ways I've changed the A-level curriculum is when we get to coursework, is I tend to use Carol Ann Duffy, other more diverse writers. And that's one aspect that I can include diversity in the curriculum for me. I mean, in terms of the government, I think when we're looking at a particular government, I think there has to be a very hard look at those people who have consistently voted against things like same-sex marriage. I think, you know, if we're going to have a government that embraces equality, that has to be really carefully looked at and think, you know, why do we have people in power who are voting against such policies? But you have an odd idea of Britishness in the curriculum at the moment. You know, I think that's coming through with politicians like Michael Gove. And, you know, we really have to question, you know, what is Britishness to us? You know, because I think actually we're a very culturally diverse country. And I think we really need to embrace that in our curriculum. I think the last thing I would say about schools embracing LGBT voices is I think the government especially and teacher training programs need to really consider, do we have particular training to help support LGBT young people particularly? Because the statistics around suicide rates for LGBT young people in particular are really quite worrying. I mean, for trans young people, those who have suicidal thoughts are sort of in the high 80s, low 90%. I mean, that's really quite worrying. So I think having and acknowledging that and making sure that staff are aware of those statistics, I think is really important.
In business, you rarely hear the expression for life. You make a purchase for a product, for a service, and there's a time frame there. Well, that's not the case with Awaken 180 weight loss. Allow me to explain. You know, a year ago, I started with Awaken 180 weight loss and had incredible success losing weight. But you can lose all the weight in the world and not keep it off. And what good is it? That's why I have support for life from Awaken 180. Yeah. I mean, I go back for check-ins and make sure everything's going smoothly, but if I ever had a problem, the counselors are there to get me back on track. Why don't you do what I did and call for a consultation? 844-346-1800. 844-346-1800 or go to awaken180weightloss.com.
What does 25 cents back on every purchase mean to you? A free lunch? That gadget you've been eyeing? A night out with the fellas? With your Primis Perks checking account, you get 25 cents back with every purchase using your debit card and zero ATM, overdraft, or annual fees. With this completely free account, you can watch the money roll in with every swipe and find the freedom to go further with your cash. Primis, the bank that gets it right. Primis is a member FDIC. ATM transactions do not count towards debit card rewards.
Yeah, 100%. Exactly. There can always be more to be done. I agree that, you know, the UK is so diverse that we shouldn't really have this fixed idea of Britishness when it comes in so many different shapes and forms. And, you know, we need to teach people about that.
Absolutely.
If you could pick one person in history who you feel is a really good example, a great example for LGBTQ plus History Month, who would it be and why?
Yeah, that's a really difficult question, because I think there are so many amazing people. I mean, you have Alan Turing, and I think Alan Turing is a great example because of the way that he sort of deciphered these war communications. But it's more about the experience, I think, for him that he faced afterwards, the fact that he's chemically castrated. You know, he's sort of completely ostracized his sexual orientation after all. You know, he's essentially a hero. I mean, you've got Marsha P. Johnson, who's a civil rights activist around like Stonewall riots, and he was really sort of instrumental in the Gay Liberation Front and things like that. But I think if I was to pick one person, I think I always like to look at people who are often quite overlooked. And I think Alan Turing and Marsha P. Johnson are quite common figures that we now look at. And it doesn't mean they're any less important, but I think people tend to say, oh, you know, Alan Turing, I know Alan Turing. But I think one of the key things for me really is Bayard Rustin, who was really part of the American sort of civil rights and social movements and things like that. But he's off of Dr. King. And I think the reason why he's overlooked is because he was essentially forced out of these sort of civil rights marches and things, because not only was he Black, but he was gay as well. And I think that was that was sort of the cherry on top of the cake, really, that whole aspect of, you know, well, okay, we can deal with the fact that you may be Black, but we're not going to accept the fact that we've got someone leading this who's also gay as well. So I think he's a really interesting figure to look at in terms of history, because he's often sidelined. So yeah, Bayard Rustin, I think, is a really good example to look at for History Month.
Absolutely. And are there any books by LGBT plus authors that you'd recommend?
So many. I mean, there are some more than others. I mean, you might have heard of Alan Hollinghurst. He writes a lot of specifically gay fiction. So I've read quite a lot of his stuff. I started reading his at university, so The Sparshalt Affair, The Line of Beauty, Plea Charge novels as well. So they are quite, there's quite a lot of adult themes in them. So I probably wouldn't recommend them to students probably below A-level standard. I mean, Patricia Highsmith, I've mentioned before, who wrote Carol. You've got earlier writers as well who we often don't look at. So E.M. Forster, for example, was very commonly involved, you know, known to be involved in gay relationships. And he wrote Maurice, which was sort of quite an early sort of 20th century novel. It's called Orlando, which actually looks at a character who transgresses between male and female identities and things like that. So it's a really quite an old text now, I suppose, old in the way that we might look at it now. But, you know, she's really good, obviously, Virginia Woolf to look at. But then you've got some really recent authors as well. So you've got Becky Albertelli, who wrote the book that Love, Simon is based on, which is obviously a great film that's sort of come out recently. And there's also a really interesting author called Rainbow Rowell, they've written a really interesting sort of series, which is almost like an LGBT Harry Potter sort of series. So that's a pretty good read, and that's probably quite good for younger readers, sort of year nine and things like that, really. So there's a whole range, but, you know, a little bit of research and you'll find plenty. So, yeah,
thank you. That's great. So how can people get more involved in LGBT plus support and movement?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think you don't have to be LGBTQ to get involved. I think that's the first thing I would say. I think people often feel that, oh, you know, why History Month and we don't? And I think actually, if you break down all the different celebratory events that happen throughout the year, there are tons. I mean, there was recently the National Cabbage Day, I think. There are various things around there, or National Lettuce Day or something. But I think the first thing I would say is whether you're LGBT or not, you've got to be caring, you've got to be supportive, you've got to be understanding of everybody's experiences. I think that's the first thing we need to be, is be open-minded. You know, you don't have to be getting involved in activism. You don't have to be sat on a student panel necessarily reviewing policy. I think the first key thing is just respect, you know, not, you know, bullying someone because of their sexual orientation or because of their supposed sexual orientation. Because I think sometimes we make that assumption that this person must be gay because of the way they act, but that's just not true. So we need to be really careful of that. I mean, I think the next thing I would say is get involved, read around all of these different sort of experiences. I mean, there's a great book called Pride, which is written by Matthew Todd, who was the editor of Attitude magazine, but he's written some amazing stuff. And that is a great book in terms of just starting to know more about history. And it's the same with Black history. It's the same with all aspects of history. The more you educate yourself, the more, you know, the less ignorant you'll become, and the more open you will be in terms of accepting those voices. So I think definitely read, definitely be supportive, but I think listen as well. You know, I think, again, just listen to people's experiences, you know, and listen intently. You know, don't just sort of think, oh yeah, okay, great, okay, I've listened to you for 5 minutes, I'm going to go off and do something else now. I think it really hone into what people's experiences are like. And that's not just for LGBT people, it's for people who are from different ethnic backgrounds. It can be people who live in poverty. It can be people who are female. You know, I think treat people as individuals and the rest will follow, really. Yeah, that's the advice I would give.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, we should try to get more involved, whether you're LGBT plus or not. And it's really important for that. And finally, how have you been doing in lockdown?
Yeah, I've been okay, actually. I think the challenge of, I live alone. I live alone with my cat. So the challenge has been sort of trying not to talk to myself in the mirror most mornings. So I now talk to the cat as well. But yeah, I think it has been a challenge, but I tend to go out for little walks and do things and video call and talk to friends. And how about yourself?
Oh, just been getting on with the schoolwork, you know, and just trying to go out a bit just to get some exercise and stuff. Stephanie?
Yeah, I mean, it's just schoolwork.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that with the schoolwork, I think just think, you know, you're still getting an education, you're still learning about new things every day. And I think if you just give yourself a purpose, that can really keep you going, you know. So absolutely, that I would say, you know, that's what I've tried to do, is give myself a purpose every day, and even little things, you know, reward yourselves for little things that you managed to achieve. And I think
it's very important. It is very good advice. Well, that brings us to the end of our podcast. Thank you for joining me today, Mr. Allen and Stephanie. It's been a pleasure to have you on. I hope everyone enjoyed that, and make sure to follow and listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts and YouTube. So please stay safe and stay at home, everyone. See you all next time.
Bye.
Bye.
In business, you rarely hear the expression for life. You make a purchase for a product, for a service, and there's a time frame there. Well, that's not the case with Awaken 180 weight loss. Allow me to explain. You know, a year ago, I started with Awaken 180 weight loss and had incredible success losing weight. But you can lose all the weight in the world and not keep it off. And what good is it? That's why I have support for life from Awaken 180. Yeah. I mean, I go back for check-ins and make sure everything's going smoothly, but if I ever had a problem, the counselors are there to get me back on track. Why don't you do what I did and call for a consultation? 844-346-1800. 844-346-1800, or go to awaken180weightloss.com.